So the Plank City Council, the Chief County Commissioners Joint Work Session of Wednesday, October 27, 2010, is set to order at 6 p.m. We'll first take roll call and establish forums. Start with the City Council.
Rick Allen here.
Counselor Douglas Ward.
Mayor Kenny Shields.
Counselor Don Brenner.
Counselor John McAfee.
Counselor Hedges.
City Recorder Luana Damabell.
Administrative Assistant Patty Morgan.
Thank you, Council. We have all council and staff present. Forum is established for the city.
I just got a text message from Tammy. She jumped me a little late. I'm sure Alan was supposed to be here with Dave Cantor any minute, so we're not going to have any official votes anyway, so I would suggest we go ahead and move forward.
All right. Luana, would you like to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance, please?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. This item is added agenda items. As far as I know, the city has done. Rick, do you have anything?
No.
I think we're covering everything. Unless you want to cover something else, we'll see you at the end.
Yeah, okay. Nope, nothing comes to mind for me. All right, then we'll move on to item number six. U.S. Highway 97 and First Street Reed Road Traffic Signal Update.
Tom Bliss, the Director of the Deschutes County Road Department, has given a report on that and try to answer any questions.
I think most of these people were meeting last night, so I'm not sure how much detail I need to go into, but we pass out a handout here. Pass this down. This is actually a handout that we had at the meeting last night, so some of you have already seen this. And if you want extra copies of this, I think a lot of you saw this last night, but it circulates around for you. A brief update on the traffic study that we're doing in the Pines Corridor. And just a little bit of background on that for those of you that haven't been involved in it as much. The partnership of City of Pine, the Pine Industrial Group, Deschutes County, and ODOT that are jointly doing a study of the downtown the Pine Corridor. And basically, that's from First Street down through 6th Street. And what this, I guess you call some of the goals or why we're doing the study is to look at operational and safety issues in that part of La Pine, and specifically looking probably in most detail at the First and Reed intersection with 97. In the handout there are some project goals that were established there. One is to identify pedestrian and bicycle safety along that corridor, and also to identify a phased improvement plan. So we're going to be looking at not only the long term, but what are some interim fixes that we can do to address some of those safety issues. And probably most importantly, the study is going to establish some cost estimates for the project. These cost estimates, they are going to be really what's key in developing a funding strategy and prioritizing those improvements that are identified as part of the study. Where we're at right now with the study, the county has contracted with a consultant, Hilson & Associates, their traffic engineering firm. They are taking a look at this whole corridor. So far, they've compiled all of the existing data that's out there. There's a number of studies that have been done back in 2005. The county and ODOT did a similar study on that corridor, although they weren't looking at the long-term signal-type improvements. Along with all the available data, We did a field trip out there, and we actually, a whole group of us, ODOT representatives, Rick, City of Pine, Mayor, county staff, went down and actually started at one end of town, walked all the way through both sides. Took quite a while looking at all of the different issues along there. What our consultant has done with all of that is they've come up with what they call an existing conditions report, and a few interesting things came out of that report. One thing in the Lapine area, they found that it's the peak hour traffic in Lapine is during the midday, which is a little different than in most circumstances. You look at most cities, City of Bend, City of Redmond, the peak hour traffic tends to be 4 to 6 p.m. is when everybody's getting off work. Lapine, however, the through traffic on the highway peaks a slightly different time, but when you look at the combined traffic of all the side streets, it's peaking right during the midday lunchtime. And that also just happens to be when all the kids are trying to get back and forth across 97.
The other thing, any idea why that is?
Don't really know, whether it's just the businesses that are within the city, and I'm not sure, maybe some.
That's why a lot of businesses, if people break for lunch, that's when they go check their mail and such.
Mm-hmm. You got to cross the highway to get to the post office. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, some people who work out here in the industrial park and such.
Okay. And one thing they did find was that all of the critical intersections, even First and Reed, all of those currently are operating within the standards established by both county and ODOT. ODOT and county look at these slightly differently. Even though that it's meeting the current standards on those, looking at the field observations, most of those intersections aren't functioning at the level that you would think they would from the traffic modeling. And they actually found that the main intersections, the First Street, Finley Butte, and Huntington, all three of those intersections currently meet what they call volume-based signal warrants. In other words, they if you put a signal there, that would definitely be something that would help the traffic. So that's where they're at right now. The next steps in the report or in the study are going to be the inroad improvements report, which the consultant almost has completed. As part of that, we had a public open house here in Lapine last night that most of you folks attended. There was a lot of, that was a very good meeting. We got a lot of good feedback from there. I think the consultant is taking some of the ideas and input from that will be rolled into some of the proposed improvements, including some of those interim improvements. All of these reports that the consultant is putting out, the ones that they've done, and the interim improvements that we'll be posting soon, will be on the website that's on that handout. They've created a public website in there, and that website also has provision that public can go in there and actually make comments on things based on an interactive map that they have. So, make sure you visit that site and make sure you get those comments either to me or to our consultant. The final report is due out in January, and that will include the proposed long-term improvements, whether that's signals or whatever at those intersections, and include those cost estimates that we talked about. There will also be a final public open house, probably similar to what we had down here in Pine, that we'll do when that draft final report comes out before we actually finalize that. And we'll make sure we get plenty of notice for that January meeting.
Yes?
Tom, you mentioned that the light mentioned like three intersections. You said something about a light would improve those intersections. But the light also would stop the traffic on the highway. And I think that was the purpose of the study, to figure out what impact traffic backing. Let's say you had a light at First. The traffic backing up into town, the main part of town, would create some of its own problems.
Right. There's obviously trade-offs in any of those. A signal at First, and we talked about this some last night, it's real critical when you have high-speed traffic coming into the first signal that they've run into since Bend, that the driver needs some sort of visual cues there that they are coming up to a traffic signal, they're coming into an urban area. So a lot of those improvements are the other things that, that the consultant will be looking at. Some of those might even be able to be done as the interim improvement that would enhance the eventual signal or whatever is done at the intersection.
And you remember as well as anybody, the light at 3rd Street and the Parkway on the south end of the end, just past Les Schwab, when that light first went in, people coming from the south and actually from the north too weren't used to that light being there, and we had some fatalities there because of that.
Yeah, I think there's still some issues. Rick, I don't know if you have any comments. Rick's been really involved in the whole process. And,
well, I mean, we'll see what I'm hoping this time is that we, what we have to do is not have another study. And then take this and actually then start pushing ODOT, our delegations, to get some earmarks or whatever you need to do. It's got to, it's on the stick. The First Street is some of that. So we just have to start, you know, being in line and pushing and stuff. And because otherwise we'll just restudy it in 5 years. This will take us a few years. But I think it's going to be a great document. It's a good crew of people working on it, and thank Liggy and the county and everyone for, you know, stepping up on that.
I think we need to thank the Lapine Industrial Group. You wouldn't be doing this study if they hadn't written the majority of the check. That was very good of them to step forward on that.
Yeah, that's for sure. Dennis, did you want to go through everything on the agenda and then ask for comment, or do you want to ask for comment as you go?
Tom has a couple deals, and then I think Lee's got, if you have questions or comments from the council, this is a good time to do it on this particular one.
Council?
Most of us attended last night and, you know, and discussed a lot of our concerns. One thing that I just want to clarify was that based on what was said last night, my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that this was, that you haven't gone and did another traffic study. This was based on studies that have done, that you have done previously, and that you have scheduled another traffic study, right?
Well, the actual traffic volume data was done by ODOT. And they had done that. It was fairly recent. They did that just this past year.
Okay.
And so they, rather than having the consultant do all those traffic counts, ODOT actually did those and provided that to the consultant.
It was after McDonald's and prior to Subway.
Okay.
That's what he said.
Yeah. And a lot of the traffic counts was interesting because a lot of that was done with video cameras so that they could do the turning movements and whatnot. And I think that was real telling in what's happening at those intersections versus just regular traffic counts that you did.
So do you have any plans to do an additional study?
Well, this will be the study coming out. We don't have any plans to do any additional traffic counts themselves, unless they get in the study and there's some conflicting data, but they've gone over that pretty closely.
Okay.
The study will show us when the signal's needed. I mean, here everybody in the room probably says it's needed yesterday.
Well, that was the point I made earlier from their, from them looking at the existing data. Traffic signals are already blurred, even though all the intersections are below ODOT's volume to capacity ratio, they still meet traffic warrants just because of the backing up on the side streets. And so the three main intersections, 1st and 97, Finley Butte, and Huntington, all of those currently meet signal warrants. Obviously, with the more, as the economy picks up and businesses come in, that's going to be crucial.
I'd like to take a minute here before we go on and just for the record make note that Commissioner Unger did arrive at 6:03 and Commissioner Bainey at 6:12.
Tom, there's no, even Bob Bryant has started to come to the realization that sometimes roundabouts, even on state highways, work better than signals. So just because, I mean, they may come up and say either a roundabout or a signal at like 1st Street, or it doesn't necessarily have to be a signal. It needs something that allows traffic to merge and to enter the highway and to cross the highway.
Under ODOT's policy, they actually have to look at roundabouts as an option at those when they're considering the signal. So that will be looked at.
And then would something like that, if I might, would be a larger one, like is at Sun River instead of a small one, like in Bend, because your big trucks and heavy haulers have to be able to get around those things.
Yeah, you know, Highway 97 obviously is a major freight route, and about 20% of the traffic is heavy trucks on that highway. So any solution down there has to address the freight traffic.
Doesn't that get a little complicated with a big roundabout? You're going to have to take somebody's property.
that'll be part of what they look at. They will look at those cost studies, and then you have to weigh, you know, how it functions versus the cost, and so that will be coming out of this study, that final draft.
And what it might be complicated, one of the reasons they would put in they put roundabouts in some areas instead of lights is because, can you imagine, 3 o'clock in the morning, that light turns red on 97 and nobody's trying to cross. It's lights work if the traffic is kind of equal. Mm-hmm. On the cross streets, but when it's very unequal, sometimes there's better options.
Yeah, don't they have smarter lights than they
have? Yeah, all the
media. Yeah.
And most of the new signals are pretty good. They've got the actual video cameras, right, and sensors in the pavement.
I think that probably my feeling is, without polling people here, is that probably ODOT needs to test a roundabout on Highway 97. Mm-hmm. One of the many communities they've been building lots of new improvements that they evidently have decided not to put a roundabout, but they just built a new bypass in Redmond and didn't put a roundabout in, and they haven't done any in Bend yet on Highway 97. So their work is going to be uphill.
There's one in that
story. To convince that on Highway 97 from California to Washington, there's going to be one roundabout. Their work is cut out for them.
We'll all be there to use it.
Sorry, Steve, you got to dream it out there.
Yeah. Comments?
No.
Not sure what?
No, I'm fine.
Want to move on with item number 7?
Mom? I'm sorry.
Oh, no.
You don't have a comment?
Question? More than.
Tom, you're on number 7.
Okay. On the agenda, discussion of transfer of jurisdiction for county roads in La Pine. I just want to start saying that this is a discussion item. We're not bringing anything to the councilor's board as far as a proposal, but what we really wanted to do was to get this subject out there. The council and the board need to consider the long-term eventuality of transitioning between county authority on roads within the incorporated area versus city control of those roads. The county maintains just over 20 miles of roads that are within the incorporated boundary of the city of La Pine. And right now, La Pine is the only city in the county where we're maintaining roads within the incorporated area. The other cities, Bend, Redmond, and Sisters, everything within the incorporated area is maintained and controlled by the city. They're all city streets.
Why don't you tell them how that happened?
Okay, it's actually back in 1998. It was met independently with all three cities. At the time, the county was facing reductions in the amount of money that we got from federal timber receipts, and we met with all the cities and actually came up with intergovernmental agreements with those cities for the transfer of jurisdiction of those roads. There was some transitional payment on the roads that occurred with all those agreements. They were a little bit different for each city.
5 years of payments.
5 years of payments.
Okay. But the agreement, after we paid the cities for a 5-year period, and I think, what did you have, close to 100 miles in Bend?
Yeah.
100 miles of road. After the cities took those over and they got payments for 5 years, the agreement also said, as you annex areas and there are county roads in there, you will take those roads. So that's why all the roads in the other three cities belong to the cities.
Okay, so there are no county roads in any other city?
Correct.
In the county.
Just a couple of other points here. Of course, one of the main reasons for incorporation of the city was so that the city could have control over destiny and what happens within the Lapine area. The public infrastructure, water, sewer, roads, is typically owned and maintained by cities. A couple of reasons for that, primarily that public infrastructure serves city residents. It does serve outside residents, but it serves city residents and it serves city businesses. You know, all of the businesses within Lapine rely on the water, sewer, and roads. The other main point is the city, and not the county, has the means to raise revenue within the city limits. In other words, system development charges, utility fees, local gas taxes, all of those are under the city's authority and not the county. So even though the county has roads we maintain within the city, we really have no means to raise revenue for maintenance on those roads other than our county funds. So that was really, I don't know, Dave, you get it, or?
One of the things on the Crescent Creek subdivision, have you talked to them? Did they ever tell you that you work on an agreement where we were talking about doing some sort of a contract or an IDA on Crescent Creek because you're going to take those over?
Right. Well, that came up, and actually Dave and I discussed that here a month or so ago on those roads. There's a couple of subdivisions in Lapine that were in the process of being built prior to the city incorporating and actually prior to the county adopting a moratorium on taking new roads into the system. And a couple of roads appear to have been dropped through the cracks or something, didn't ever get established as county roads and probably should have at the time. And Rick and I have talked about that on a couple occasions. There's roads in Crescent Creek and
the one I just talked about?
Subdivision, I don't remember the name.
Huntington Meadows. Just wanted, you guys were going to initiate the agreement. Have you given it?
No, I need to get it.
Okay, just that's fine. It doesn't matter if it's not on, has to be on the front burner's eyes. Since we're all here, make sure that at some point works its way through the system over the next few months. And when we've already worked it out with the planning and all that stuff, so we're handled it.
Well, and again, it probably needs to be kind of part of this bigger conversation over the whole transition of county and city.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the way you described it is normally how it's done. The cities, acquire those roads. So I mean, I think that the assumption is there over time, in some process, we would acquire more roads. Now, there's a difference between 1998 and 2010. 1998, Bend was just in the middle of their booms, and SDCs were flowing in at a high rate of speed. If we had a $2,000 or $3,000 or $4,000 road SDC in 2010, we would have collected nothing. And with gas tax decreasing because people are driving less, all the other things, ODOT income isn't going up particularly. We have to make sure we also have a tax of $1.80 a thousand where Redmond's is $6.20 or something.
Well, whatever about $6.14.
$6.14 a thousand, so they take in over three times what we do. So we start adding this all up. There really is no mechanism that the city of Lapine could take on 20 miles of road in the next year or two or three. So I think that we have to think through which roads, how we do it, and what formula and how it works. Yes, because, you're going to see income tax, not income tax, we are, but that doesn't matter in that sense, but the property tax compression with the values dropping, you're not going to see 3% growth. You may see no growth or 1% reductions. And so the reality of the next 5 or 10 years is a whole lot different than from 98 to 2008. So, we have to be on.
Well, I have questions. Yeah, now, let's say like in Redmond or Bend, I think the county roads were your farm-to-market roads. They were your collectors and arterials that came into town, and as the town grew, they had their own residential roads, but they continued to use the county roads to get in and out of town. Right. But in Lapine, is it all the roads? that are county roads or are the residential roads residential and they're not county roads?
A good share of the residential roads, all the paved subdivisions essentially are county roads. So the county is maintaining local roads as well as collectors and arterials within the incorporated area. So it's a mixture.
I think the difference is partly because of those cities are all 100-year cities, and you had UGBs. And so Lapine, these subdivisions that we're talking about, many of them were built in the boom, 2000, 2003, 4, 5, 6. The city didn't exist. All the planning, all the approval, all the road requirements, all the standards are county standards. And the city didn't exist, had no role in them. And that's the difference. Ben Redmond and Sister existed, and they had a long history of rules, regulations, and UGBs. And even though it was outside the city limits, you built UGB, you still built the city standard. So when the city moved out, you built the city standard. These roads are not any city standard.
Well, the county subdivisions weren't built as city standards.
Right.
And so that's always a challenge as the city grows and accepts those. And cities have public facilities committees that determine standards for the roads. And, Lapine's a city that's born and now it's growing up, and I think we need to take these things in steps. And
right.
I could see steps as we look at developing an agreement that treats maybe some of the collectors and arterials a little different than the residential streets, because those are county people coming into the city of Lapine as well as people in the city of Lapine using those roads. So,
yeah.
I agree.
Now, to be fair, if I might. You talk about city standards, but as we developed roads in the industrial park and other areas down here, DEQ doesn't want curbs.
No, I don't think
they want the sidewalks separate. They want the swales because of the impact into the groundwater. So this is a different, you have to build a little differently here because of the snow and the moisture that's here and how it gets into the swales and doesn't build up on the roof.
If we agree to accept these roads into the city system, will the county bring those roads up to city standard before they're transferred to us? Because that's a big expense. And just like we were just told, and looking at the tax base that we have here, I don't see how we've got the ability at this time to maintain them.
Well, if I may, first, I think the short answer to your question is no. However, typically when we transfer jurisdiction of county roads to a city, the transfer is accompanied by a cash payment. And you can use that cash payment to bring the roads up to city standards, or you can bank it and use it for maintenance over a period of time. And the routine maintenance on the roads can probably be covered by the gas tax payments that you're receiving from the state. The city, I presume, has been receiving those gas tax payments since it was incorporated, and as Tom just explained, there's about 20 miles of road that we've maintained that we haven't had to spend that on. The gas tax receipts are actually going to go up come January. That is not a revenue source that is in decline at the moment.
Because they raised the gas tax.
Right, because they raised the gas tax. And we're not suggesting, as Tom and Rick have said, that this is something that's going to happen next week or next month or next year, but I think that it's something that absolutely does have to be on the city's radar screen, because the county is simply not in the business of maintaining roads within city limits.
I agree. I think it's something that needs to be periodically acknowledged, that the time will come that the city will be facing this and will take this over. Just we're going to have new councils and such, and so that information has to always be out there, that acknowledgement that this will happen someday.
Well, I would caution on us saying someday as in like 10 years down the road. I think it's important that these are considerations that when you become a new city, had to have been factored into a discussion about public safety and road infrastructure and those components. And so I definitely agree that I think some of the arterials and collectors are things that we could certainly talk about in the residential pieces. But again, I think it gets back to the control of your own area. You have some state revenue that comes in to help offset those costs. And whereas the tax dollars right now are really limited, but you also are extremely low in your tax rate. So, and I know you want to keep that, but part of being a new city, I know you know that as well, is struggling with how you pay for all the things that people want you to provide but don't want to pay for. So I'm not saying that it, you know, we're coming to you with tomorrow, but I wouldn't be looking, you know.
No, but it's not too soon to look at.
Yes,
we will be starting our TST, transportation system,
yes,
and working on that, and so we'll have to factor all of that in.
Great.
Okay, now, the county has an SDC for roads, but we cannot collect that within the city, even on our own development, correct? Not in the industrial park, not in, and if the city had an assisted development charge in place and then the market turns around, they cannot use that money on county roads, is that correct? They could only use them on their own roads.
They could. They would have to demonstrate a benefit to the city streets.
Okay.
But an SDC can't be spent on maintenance.
No, it's asking for new construction, and only their percentage of that improvement that development has on that improvement. But I was just finding out how you spend that money. County, clearly, one, we're not going to collect it inside the city limits, so that goes away.
We'll have our own road SDC in a year. Yeah, we take in about, I have a budget sitting here, $75,000 from, that's our income from
roads.
And then we have to snowplow some roads, and we've got some gravel roads that weren't county roads. And, you know, so, you know, this all gets said and done, you know, you've got 20 miles of road, you can start doing the math.
Yeah.
It's mathematically impossible, so unless something else happens.
You would probably contract, I mean, you wouldn't set up your own road department, I wouldn't imagine, for that kind of money. You'd probably contract either with private or municipal of some type.
Right. And that's what we have with plowing and everything. But yeah, I mean, it's just such a small number. I mean, a whole lot of miles of road without a big population.
Mm-hmm.
And you're getting gas tax based on population registrations, vehicle registration. So if we were denser, but we have this huge, big, long city, but not lots of people in it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, we have another several miles of road that we are taking care of. Like Hagel subdivision is 6 or 7 miles, I think, something like that. So we may have 30 miles or something, 35 that we are total. Well, we give that, that's $70,000, that's $2,000 a mile, but you got to take off some other stuff. I mean, it's a pretty small number. So I don't want you to leave here thinking that the city is going to be able to wing much of this anytime soon.
Councilor Greiner?
That was the question I asked, is how much does it cost per mile to maintain the road?
Depends on how much snow.
It's different depending on the road. Major arterial is a lot different than a local road, but a paved road, in the neighborhood, $10,000 to $15,000 per year, and that's looking at the full life of the road. You know, that's chip seals and ultimately doing overlay.
$10,000 to $15,000
per mile per year.
That sounds like we could maintain probably 5 miles on the budget fee.
Right. And like I said, those are the long term costs. So if you're maintaining a road over a 15-year period, you're going to be chip sealing that every 6 to 7 years. Then at the end of that period, you're going to be doing an overlay on it. So that's total up of cost.
You know, what I can see, maybe it's a road that we're working on because of some over renewal down the road, or we get some grant money where we're doing a sidewalk project and it's something that we're doing, and then that becomes, for some kind of a combination of reasons, we work with you, it becomes a city street. You know, maybe some earmarked money, like I could say, you get small cities grants for $25,000. Stuff like that.
We just need to plan.
Yeah, definitely.
So legitimate discussion.
Hodgepodge. So, someone mentioned steps. So what do you envision that to be? Someone said that it would probably come in steps. I would imagine your TSP would be a good, so if you're doing your transportation planning, and that's happening in the next year or so, is that what you mentioned?
Yeah.
Yes.
we'll be starting on that in
January or whatever. Sometime, come up.
I would, and I apologize for not having discussed this with you before I throw out this idea, but I would think that once you complete the consolidation of the water and sewer districts into the city, that might be the time to start having serious discussions about a timeline for transitioning county roads into the city, because the water and sewer district will bring to you vehicles and other equipment that could potentially be used by a larger public works department generally, and there would be economies of scale in expanding water and sewer into a public works department that also handled road maintenance. One other point I want to make is that the county faces very serious long-term deficits in its road maintenance budget, and at the risk of sounding selfish, one of the ways that we can handle our own deficit is to not maintain those roads that we really shouldn't be maintaining.
You might get 2,000 a mile, but we're getting nothing.
We just have to all be nice to each other.
We can take a bake sale, too.
The people that we're working for here, not the city or the city.
Absolutely.
We have to make it all work the best way. Councilor Hedges, did you have anything?
No.
Anyone else?
Thank you, Tom. Would you mind if Lee Smith came forward on the next one?
Not at all. Item number 8, future of the industrial park.
Yeah, anybody else from your group?
Yeah, I wanted to make it clear, if you asked me to speak, that I am the general manager contracted by the contract by the Pioneer Industrial Group. We have three of our board members here. And anything concerning long-range vision or policies or anything like that, Dick Russell, Sylvia Shields, and Ted Schiller are here as members of the board. And they should really address that. I'm going to address all aspects.
I asked this be put on the agenda. And the reason is, of course, that the industrial park, the land belongs to Deschutes County, is managed by an independent board, but it clearly is within the city. And kind of wanted to know what the councilors envisioned, if their vision's any different than how that thing was originally developed, and get some input, not only for the Board of Commissioners, but for the advisory committee on where the councilors would like to see that go, or if they have additional questions or anything.
Okay.
So however you want to handle it.
Well, this is not anything that the council has really ever discussed. It's the future of the management of the industrial park. Mickey's been doing such a good job. Just kind of been leaving it up to them, unless I'm not remembering something.
Well, maybe a short vision statement of how you see us developing. I know the a little slow right now, but are you looking at larger lots later, or what is it you guys are going to do to bring the council up to speed?
Well, let me address that, and then the members of the board would like to add something. They would prefer to do that, obviously. But we recognize that the industrial park is quite large, 327 acres, and it needs to serve quite a variety of different industrial uses, other than the property immediately west of the industrial park, a very small parcel that's zoned industrial. The industrial park is the only industrially zoned land in all of South County. And as a consequence, we created the Newberry Business Park and got a new zoning for it, the business park zoning, specifically so we could handle not just light industrial, but more of the commercial industrial uses, repair shops and those kinds of things. And we're looking at the Finley Butte Industrial Park as possibly something that could be what we're calling an eco park. That's the term that's used now. A support facility for the renewable energy companies in all of Central Oregon, not just in Southern Deschutes County. And I'm happy to say that today I spent quite a bit of time with two gentlemen from the Valley talking specifically about that. A support facility, manufacturing, assembly, those kinds of things for the geothermal development being done up at Newberry. With that and BioGreen, we're talking to companies about providing materials for proposed solar farms out in Christmas Valley. and if there's any small-scale hydro developed, we would be the natural staging location for all of that, because, like I said, we're the only industrially zoned land. So we're looking at controlling the uses of it. I'll give you a nice example of what that amounts to. With the BioGreen facility, they're running 19.5 acres. We would not entertain something like Prineville did with Facebook. 122 acres for 22 jobs. That makes absolutely no sense for anybody with any background in economic development. So we are looking at the best interests of all of Southern Deschutes County in this and trying to meet a variety of different kinds of needs, recognizing this is a scarce resource, it's a valuable resource, and it needs to be utilized in a way that maximizes job creation and capital investment in this area, taxable capital investment. At the same time, protecting the interests of the people here. That's why the Pine Industrial Group is funding the traffic study, to make sure that all of this is done absolutely right. But that's our interest, and we've been in it long enough, I think, that we can do that.
How many acres have infrastructure to them that are empty right now that are available for development that have infrastructure, roads, sewer, water?
Actually, all of it now has infrastructure except for the 40 acres, of which 28 is under option at Sylvan Power still until the end of January. That's part of a subdivision plat, but we have not developed that. So the certified shovel-ready site, of which 19 and a half acres is optioned by BioGreen, the balance of it is undeveloped, but all of that has utilities around three sides of the site and then the railroad on the other side. The Finney Butte Industrial Park, we developed 30 acres, all of which has utilities, and we're talking to a company, again, about buying just 1 acre of that, but you know, it'll be fully developed. The Newberry Business Park, surprisingly, we had the situation where we sold 49 out of 60 lots in the Newberry Business Park just when the market turned down, and so we only have 5 buildings out there, which is disappointing to everybody. And we changed the way companies buy property out there now with accounting, so they can only option it until they're ready to actually build. They can't get a building permit, or they have to get a building permit and go through the site plan review before they can actually acquire the property, so that they can't cancel all their plans and put it back on the market and sell it to somebody else. That was an unfortunate situation, and we didn't realize until after the fact that that's what was going on. So you'll see some resale signs out there. But virtually all the property either has the utilities available now to the property lines, or in the case of that 40 acres, it's under a subdivision plan with all of that provided in planning.
I guess I was asking how much of that has infrastructure to it. How much land is that? About.
It's 120 acres on the east side of the railroad track, so the other 200 acres roughly.
Some of it is developed.
It's on the west side, and much of that is developed. And we're in the industrial park right now. It's a tenant. So, yeah, all of that property south of us has utilities and roads. The property north has utilities, but no internal development. And the Newberry Business Park, of course, is fully developed out.
Thank you.
I have a question. I would like to see one of the roads dedicated to the truck traffic. We've got 3 of them there, and residential areas are in there. Habitat for Humanity is building homes there. There are a lot of children who walk down the middle of the street. They don't have sidewalks, but I would like to see maybe Reed dedicated to truck traffic instead of when they come in from the south, they turn off Finley Butte and go up that way. And I'm all for the industrial park. I would like to also see a portion of the light industry dedicated to maybe a supermarket, something that we could have that would be competitive with the high prices of the stores, and to encourage that kind of business to come in.
Right now, retail is not allowed in either the industrial park or the business park zoning. And we've had some companies that we've talked to, like one that wanted to build a movie theater, And we're advised that there are other zones that accommodate that, and therefore they cannot be accommodated in the industrial zone.
Where would that be in Lapine?
It'd be a community facility zone, probably.
The
or commercial.
West side of the highway is getting crowded. We have nothing on the east side.
Right.
And why
I'll
is
point
it
out that once your comprehensive plan's adopted, then the city has the ability to change zoning in there.
So that there could be retail in that area.
Right. Instead of the truck traffic, I specifically asked Kittleson at the very beginning of this project to look at that issue. It does make a lot of sense to have Reed Road service things like the biomass plant, right. Obviously. And this company I talked to today would also use Reed Road as the main access. You come down from the north, you make a left turn onto Reed, you go into the industrial park, you don't go by any residential areas. Mm-hmm. So that makes a lot of sense to right. me also. And I think, you know, it might be a good idea to look at Foss as being closed off to truck traffic.
That would be good. I understand that the trucks don't like it because they have a stop sign at the railroad when they go down Foss or Reed, I guess it is. So they do Finley Butte.
But, some of the companies that use Finley Butte, but the ones I talked to today, they don't want to use Finley Butte. They don't want to use Foss or Midway. They don't want to have to make turns for their trucks.
Okay.
So that will come out of the traffic study, I believe, since I did that.
Yeah, all that stuff will go into consideration. And as far as the uses in the industrial park and how we, the people, would like to see the industrial park develop, hopefully we'll get some good turnout and start doing our zoning codes and get some good input. That'll be the timing. That'll be shaping for.
And one thing that I have to make as a caution is most of that's market-driven. You know, we can say we want to have a high-tech software company. It doesn't mean we can just go out and grab one and bring them in.
Right.
So the market's going to determine a lot of that.
Right.
I was wondering if any of your board members want to comment or if they have any additional comment. Any of your board members want to comment on anything?
I'd like to make a comment, I think, in terms of our vision. We would like to see the ability to have some large lot available for companies that might come in. Right now, if BioGreen takes the 20 acres of the shovel-ready site, that only leaves us about 66 acres there, and that's not big enough for some company. And so there are BLM lands to the east that would be nice if we had those available for industrial development, large lots.
Yeah, Ted makes a good point. Looking at size of lots, the largest piece of ground we have right now is the 40 acres that Sylvan has the option on 28. The other property is divided about 30 acres next to BioGreen and then about 30 acres just north of us here across the street. And those could theoretically be combined, although now with if BioGreen goes in there, the option of closing off Foss Road goes away. We don't have an option anymore, so we probably could not combine those two lots anymore. So we don't have large lots.
I would suggest, Ted and Lee, that your board might want to talk to the BLM and see who has the best shot at picking that up, whether it be the city or the county on the negotiations. It really will be up next to the city limits.
Mm-hmm.
And to make the application for industrial growth might be better off coming from the city with support from the county.
Right. Yeah, the comprehensive plan currently shows an area to the southeast side that is reserved for future employment lands, is what it's called, not industrial, but employment lands. And to the best of my knowledge, that's actually Forest Service land. I've looked at the maps, and I don't think that's BLM. I think it's Forest Service.
I don't want to speak for future boards, but the county has some property that's completely surrounded by BLM out by Millican and those areas that BLM would like to consolidate.
Mm-hmm.
And there may be an opportunity with future boards to use some of that land as trade.
I've been going to the meetings of a large lot advisory group that the county is heading up the three-county search for large lots. So we've been looking at that area down here as a potential that would be approved by the state as a future large lot. Maybe that would help to accelerate through the planning processes, at least the state processes, to get that made available to companies that need 100 acres or more.
All right, Rick, are you in? I'm sorry, may I ask Rick a question?
Go ahead.
once the comp plan's adopted and approved by the LCD, and let's say that they wanted to pick up some ground, are you allowed to, if you don't have large lots, industrial land already, are you allowed to bring that in, even though you're well within your 20-year plan?
That discussion comes up when I bring this up when they talk about that. I think under the current rules, it can be very difficult because, again, it's almost like we talked about the 20 miles of road. The Pine City limits, if you were to go out and do this under LCDC rules, would be much smaller. Because they let you have so much percent for residential, so much for commercial, you know, and all that. Well, while those numbers may be small, and the fact is, we just got this done, I mean, it's basically just got approved a month ago, and we have more than enough industrial land as a percent under the rules. We have twice the residential land. So like when we grow, people think, oh, your UGB is going to expand. The UGB will not expand in this city for a long time because it's so big compared to its density. So the question comes up, is there a way, when you want a large lot, will they make exceptions to that? And so far, I don't think that's happened because this argument comes up all over Oregon. They want to go out and get another 300 acres or 500 acres for industrial land, but under that matrix, it doesn't work. So, that's the problem.
Redmond wants to do the same thing on the south end by the fairground.
Yeah, and then what Barber suggested, then what happened, the reason there was earlier of this, is every time there's a big industrial piece of property, what happens?
We just bought and subdivided into smaller pieces.
That in Redmond, or it becomes retail. And then, so what they do is, the method of getting stuff in the UGB is I get it industrial, because everyone wants jobs, and that passes with the smell test. We get it in. No else is in. We rezone it to commercial, put retail in it. Then we go out and argue, well, now we're short industrial. So then we go out and say, we have to have industrial land. And the LCDC is very jaundiced eye to all of this. So that's the dilemma. But with change of governors coming, new boards and commissions, who knows what the legislature and everything's going to do in the next cycles on this.
Tammy, did you still have a comment or question?
Well, I had been working with Mark Radabaugh before he retired on some land for Habitat in Bend, and he was talking about a 50-acre exception. And so, it seemed like that was the holy grail number of 50. And I don't know, do you recall any of this? I think it was a 50-acre maximum exception that you can apply for, and it has to, of course, go through a filtering process that's probably excruciating, but it didn't appear that it couldn't be done. But outside of 50 acres, I think you'd be a good point.
But I think the point that Rick is making accurately is that there is so much vacant land already inside the Pine UGB that it's highly unlikely that DLCD would say, oh, sure, you can bring in another 50 acres because you don't have any other vacant land in the city that you can use here.
And that's zoned appropriately.
Well, but the city, once the comp plan is adopted, the city will have the ability to rezone land.
They wouldn't see that we have an argument for more land.
I think that if that's something that Libby wants to pursue, it'd be good. I mean, you know, go ahead and look at that and see what the laws are. And you know, our comp plan, Scott Cooper's doing our zoning ordinances, which will be done in a niche. And then it gets a review. So about a year from now, we'll have all those.
That's exciting.
So, yes, it'll be very good.
As I understand this large lot study, though, it's a whole different process. We're not looking at identifying land that can be zoned industrial and brought into the UGB and all that kind of stuff. The state is actually driving that. The state wants to have an inventory of large lots throughout the state where when a company comes in and says, you know, we need to build a million square foot commercial plant, the state then has options available that they can offer to that company.
Do they supersite it?
That's what I'm recommending. That, you know, having done that with the prisons, recommending that there will be a supersizing capability. And I think that is part of the process. But that will be driven by a company who wants a large site. So it won't be subdivided. It won't be used for retail. Nothing will happen to it until somebody actually says, yeah, we want to locate in the Pine, but we need 100 acres.
Well, the county and the state are actually engaged in an economic impact analysis right now, and that's just Tri-County. And the purpose of that is to identify the need for large lot industrial land in the Tri-County area. Now, this was really being driven by the Commission of State Lands, which wants to bring in its property in the city of Redmond and develop that as large lot industrial. But that study would identify the need for large lot industrial throughout the Tri-County region. I would assume that if it can identify that study could be used, we hope it will be able to be used to help not just DSL in Redmond, but to help all the communities throughout the Tri-County area that would like to have large lot industrial development.
Dave, as long as we're talking about businesses and industrial land and commercial land, would you touch a little bit on the fund we created and have made two loans out of for helping some, and again, these aren't big loans, these are loans to help people relocate or get moved or do something, so if you wouldn't mind.
We set aside about $300,000 in our budget in the current year to create an economic development fund, and the purpose of the fund is to provide loans and what we call forgivable loans, which are really a grant, to businesses that are either relocated to Deschutes County or they're already in Deschutes County and are looking to expand their operation. Everything is tied to job creation. So EDCO, we have a memorandum of understanding with EDCO that they will administer the program. It's their job to make businesses aware of the availability of these funds and then to screen applications for the funds and make recommendations to the board. So far, we've approved one request. Well, we've approved one EDCO recommendation for $56,000 for a business in Redmond. And on Monday, the board approved another EDCO recommendation for $14,000 for a pharmaceutical company in Bend. So, if those went through and the companies did what they are promising to do, that'd be 6,300 jobs in Deschutes County.
The $14,000 one, the pharmaceutical company, they got about $1.3 million invested of their own money, and they needed some. They're moving into a 10,000 square foot building, and they needed a little bit of help expanding some of their equipment, supplies, office furniture, and that kind of stuff. They created 10. You remember seven? Was it seven?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Seven jobs. So that's $2,000 a job, which is not unreasonable.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's never designed to be the first money in, and you know, this brings you here. It's been designed to help get them over the top, get them moved, that kind of stuff. So if you have anybody that has that interest, Lee, that fund is available.
Counselors, anyone have comment? Question?
So you're happy with Lee then?
I just have a tendency to not notice when people are, you know, waving their arms, so I have to ask every once in a while.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Lee.
Thank you, Lee. And Dennis, was that what you were hoping to get? You wanted this on the agenda?
Well, wait a minute. You know, mostly you guys will have jurisdiction as soon as the comp plan's all done, and as a matter of fact, any land use applications come to you guys now. And so if you guys had any questions, just kind of feeling, are you happy the way things are working out there? Would you like to see something different, which you mentioned, and Lee addressed? So, yeah.
It's a very nice industrial park, actually, and everyone should be very proud. I know Lee and the board, you know, done a good job with it. For a little town like this, it's ready to go.
Yeah, wonderful asset.
That's why I kept getting on ODOT, because that was one of the first shovel-ready sites in the state of Oregon under Kitzhaber, and then ODOT wants to close the intersection now. that accident, so you got one state agency encouraging, another one shutting you off.
I think we've had some of the most dedicated volunteers in the entire state of Oregon working on RADY. They put a lot of years into it, and they've accomplished a lot in that industrial park, and I appreciate every bit of it.
And Liggy, you know, for those who remember, Liggy also funded the airport study, mm-hmm. most of the airport study, as well as this intersection. So they put their money to good use. And the county, I don't want to say the county lets them. the county policy is that all the money they make goes back into that development, which is where it should go.
I think it's worth noting that it's a very successful organization between Leahy and the county. All the money, the county's been a great help in making this successful. They funded, all those funds have been paid back. It kind of gives me a heartburn whenever time we give money that we want to forgive. I think agencies need to make money available. We need to change the culture where people can pay that money back. Right now, capital's hard to get. And if you can make stuff affordable, at an affordable rate or a very affordable rate, but this idea that all these companies come and get free money, and especially when an economy goes to hell like that, we see real quick who goes first. We all have good intentions. We ought to get back to taking responsibility and it all put a value back on it. That's just a personal, I guess.
Well, the pharmaceutical kind, that's why you mentioned that they got $1.3 million of their own money in there, and clearly they're already creating jobs. The average job they're looking to create is $63,000 a year. Mm-hmm. That's seven jobs. If you can put $14,000 in to bring that kind of money into your economy, that's not too bad. We're not here to buy. I don't think we can't afford, state of Oregon can't afford to pay businesses to come here, because if you can, somebody else is going to outbid you and they're going to go there. But you can help them. And it would have been nice to get money paid back into the fund, but, and maybe after the economy improves, maybe they'll not forgivable loan. But if they don't create the jobs, if they don't create what they're supposed to, we can go out and get some money back. And see how it works.
Thank you. That's my input. Anyone else before we end that discussion? Very good discussion. Thank you for that. We have no added agenda items. Does anything come to mind at this time?
Can you make a comment?
Please.
I just wanted to commend the community of Lapine and outskirts around what's been happening at the White Building. It's just absolutely amazing to see Justin there and the work that's being done and just the hope for the kids and the, and seniors walking and it just blows my mind what can happen when a great idea and a good community comes together. So I just, a little plug for what's been going on there.
Well, thank you for noticing that.
Yeah.
You know, the Parks District, they put a lot of work into recruiting.
Right.
The manager, and boy, they did a great job.
Right, and it really marries in with, you want to have a good health of your community members.
Mm-hmm.
And that linkage and partnership between Park and Rec is huge. And so, you know, people want to come and move to communities where they feel that essence that they're, you know, it's healthy and there are things to do and it's encouraging. And so I just, anyway, hats off.
Did it surprise you that seniors can walk?
We were talking about that, and it makes sense. I mean, where do you go? There isn't a mall, or you know, so you want to keep active. And so if you're a mom with a stroller, or you're, you know, maybe not wanting to walk outside, I mean, shoot, I would fall into that category too. So I mean, it's really well thought out, and it's encouraging to see that kind of involvement. It doesn't surprise me knowing this community at all, and not that get behind something you go all out, but. I just wanted to put that, it's just pretty exciting. Yeah.
Well, and I want to thank you and Luana especially for being on the board and dedicated to the city from the very first.
Yes.
And the rest of you for being, volunteers and putting your time to make the city of Lapine what it is today. You know, it's been a hard, long grind. I know back being sitting around League of City conferences and kind of going, what are we going to do next? And, you know, it's overwhelming sometimes, but you persevered and you're where you're at today, so thank you.
Thank you for that. I would like to say, though, for our counselors, our many departed counselors, I don't think any of them really wanted to leave. It was the circumstances that caused that. So I think we've had a lot of good counselors and spoken now, so thank you for that acknowledgement. Appreciate it.
Kitty, I've got a comment if I may.
Sure.
This kind of changes the venue a little bit, but in the Newberry, in the 500 acres that lies between 90s and 97, and when I went from TDCs to pollution reduction credits, originally there was a $3,000, $3,500 a lot cost. Now it's $15,000 a lot cost when they made that change. And when that change happened, it was market driven. So you've added a 500% increase on the cost of the lots there with and when that's developed. I wonder if the county, when the city takes that over, if they're going to reconsider what those costs are or what really goes to that money. Does it go back to DEQ? Does it go back to the county or does the city administer it? Because the original intent was to help with the nitrate issue if and when we ever decided to move on. But the impact.
We'll have to look into that. That's not...
I've never heard that $15,000 figure. I have no idea where that comes from. It's still $3,750.
But when you run the equation out, the original cost for developed lot was about $3,000 a lot. Today, when they change it from a TDC to a PRC, it's $15,000 about.
Well, it depends. It's based on a per acre charge, not a per lot charge.
That's what I'm telling you. With the density,
yeah, so
the average.
Maybe at the next meeting you bring a CDD down here and talk.
But my question, there's two parts of my question. What happens to the money? Does the county still administer it? Or does the city administer it?
If the county administers it, there are no plans at this time to transfer that land to the city.
I didn't hear.
The county administers the fund. The money comes to the county, and it goes into a fund that is dedicated to groundwater protection in South County. There are no plans to transfer that land to the city.
Matter of fact, the federal law that allowed us to buy it demands that we do that.
Yeah.
The land. Yeah.
It's very restricted. But, you know, maybe it would be helpful to have community development come to one of your board meetings. And just if you have a question about that or...
Well, my question was the raise. It was a very controversial issue, but the raise in the cost was market-driven. And Catherine Morrow and Tom and the whole group was in that because it was very... long story short is the market's not there now.
Right.
And I think it needs to be revisited.
Okay. I think that's a great point. We'll check into that. And do you want to chat about how you want to follow up on that? Or Vic, do you want us to follow up just with you? Or do you, is this
well,
anything
wrong? I think it's for the whole South County.
Okay. Yeah.
Me, because
yeah.
Basically, you got a lot selling in Bend for $25,000 now. Lapine is substantially. And the whole goal down there for that neighborhood was to keep it affordable.
Right.
And so you guys are a part of that, and the NIGET issue is a big part of it.
Well, I appreciate you bringing that up. We'll check into it. I didn't, but it certainly sounds like it needs to be looked at.
And Vic did a fast forward on us here. I was just going to ask Dennis if he's ready to move into public comment for Deschutes County.
Before that, I would just say, I think in closing our official part for you, to public is, since I've been here, working with the county has been very good. And, you know, you catch a lot of flack all the time because there's lots of bureaucracy and lots of things, and things aren't done right always. And, you know, it's just, it is what it is. But the response that I get from the Community Development Department, Nick and Will, Tom, I had never met him before. He's one of the people down there I didn't know. And him and I worked together. We met George, your engineer. We meet. They come down. So, thank all of you guys for, I mean, you've been good partners.
Weren't you used to that Jefferson County? You come from a very good county. There's a lot of cooperative efforts that go on between the tri-counties and a lot of different areas, from health and mental health to roads and garbage and other things. And I like to work in relationships that take part in this tri-county.
I think that two things I can add is the reason I didn't want to say it then, that our rush hour is 12-1 because 48% or something of our people are retired, and that's rush hour for them. and Dennis, 4-6 is cocktail hour. And they're not on the road.
It's a man do because of the tie-ups, because they have to work in their
car. I think the one area in 2011 we need to work on is the ultimate development is kind of our relationship with sheriffs and sheriff's departments, sheriff's patrols, law enforcement issues, as we adopt ordinances. That's a little bit like the road deal here, is, you know, I need an elected sheriff, it's a little different, but anyway, that, I haven't been able to spend much time on through sewer water, and the charters and all those other things, but it is something I think when we look at it as part of our growing and maturing, is law enforcement in general is kind of a broad issue that we're going to have to figure out a little better, but.
Quick, your tax dollars at work, Tom and I and George Cove were lucky enough to tour the northbound lane of Highway 97 from South Century to Lava View before they opened it, and got to look at how everything works, which is going to be a great road when both sides are done. But if you're going north and you turn off on Cottonwood, or you turn off on South Century Drive, or you're on South Century and you start northbound back towards Bend, you'll cross these little rubber things that are in the road, and they got little grooves in them. And if you're wondering what those are, those will be electrified, and they're to keep the deer from getting in between the fences on the road. And if you're riding a bike and you have to put your foot on it, stop and put your foot on it, you will be electrified also. They're going to be made hot by solar panels, and fences that go down both sides will connect to those. And because you can imagine, if a deer gets on the highway in that section, it's going to be between two fences, it won't be able to get out. And so that's what those are if you have to wonder what the rival is.
Looks like a good YouTube.
Tom likes them. He wants to put them on all kinds of roads.
I'm hoping the snowplows don't stay.
Oh, yeah. And they're lower than the ground. And you may notice on that stretch of roads, those lines are not painted. They are grooved in, and they are permanent. What do they call that, Tom?
It's like a thermoplastic, but it's a highly reflective.
Yeah. But they figured 5 or 6 years, so you don't have to paint. I mean, you get on a road that gets cinders and snowplows and the heavy grease thaw, this stuff's supposed to last 5 or 6 years, which is quite a while for a line on the road.
Are you ready to take public comments for the county?
Whatever you want to do, you're the mayor.
Hey, well, like I said, that kind of fast forwarded us into that anyway, so that's good. We're really pretty informal here. It's a work session, so.
I saw a hand waving back there.
I think Stu had.
Oh, I was just going to. It's striking, and you just talked about it. ODOT just did a test down here about 2 years ago. They blocked Highway 97 off. It's right by the Southwest Transfer Station between probably, I don't know, turn off to Newberry on up. They did the same striping down in a groove. It lasted about a month. It's the same stretch when somehow, when it freezes, it does come up, and the plows catch it, and it's off in the trees now. I mean, that has to be the dumbest thing. Next to the deer, but I'll be quiet.
They were going to hire an ODOT worker with carrots to just stand there.
It's
much cheaper in the long run. I don't take credit for it. I just bring you up to speed. I know. That deserves a letter to Peter Murphy to ask on Z21.
Tom and I and George asked him a lot of questions. They said they were using it quite a few places, weren't they, Tom?
I thought so. I don't know how much they've used it in Central Oregon, right?
About 2 years ago, there was one stretch between here and
there.
I know it's down the on-ramp there by the river house. They did it there also.
Well, this came up by the road, then the window station, and this is what you can
We asked about them how the stone plows don't hit them, and then, because it is grooved in.
Mm-hmm. And it's still grooved down, but it's not in
Tim?
I just want to thank Tom for mentioning that we want this to be a lab study, because we've been through so many studies down here, and to date, ODOT has stonewalled any action to put a leg on 97. And the major reason why legging was a concern is because of economic development. It was hindering establishing businesses and industry here. And now with the fast food restaurants going there, it's a big safety issue.
on my comment. You may have read, Lee, and you might want to follow this kind of closely. Matt read about the agreement that the city of Bend signed with ODOT on Juniper Ridge. That's not just for big developments, that's for smaller ones too. And it will, ODOT doesn't want it to set a precedent, but I believe it will. And what it allows you to do is identify what the fixes need to be and then do them over time. And one of the problems you have, the problem with Juniper Ridge, they have to rezone that property. Well, you can't get a rezone unless ODOT okays it, because they don't have to okay it, but they can appeal. Which means if you haven't addressed the traffic stuff, it's going to be turned down. And if you don't get the property rezoned, then you can't go to the businesses and sell it to them and get their money into it so you can do the fixes. And so basically the agreement with Juniper Ridge is it allows them to rezone the property so they can go out and market it and develop the money to do the fixes it's going to take, get the first phase done, and then get the first phase done, you can do the same thing on the second phase. But it should have application to smaller projects all around the state. And it's something you want to watch. It's brand new, and they're going to be a little sensitive about it for a while, but it made a lot of sense. So it could have application down here.
Thank you. Anyone else? Dan?
You join me? a couple of things. If we're talking about streets and city taking those on, can we play the lottery? Maybe we can win some big bucks.
Is anyone going to make that much money on the lottery?
The idea we've talked about with him, at least in some of the past, is a collaboration idea between jurisdictions, city, county, and that kind of thing. Maybe on the road, you know, we could, you know, use your trucks and use our drivers and kind of phase into that area. So that's just one thought. But the reason that Stu and I are here is to kind of express our appreciation to Dennis for what you've done for this part of the county, for the Pine and this area. And the people here just, we appreciate that. And you've been involved, I think, in the Senior Center project.
18 years.
You've been involved in the Blueberry Business Park, the Business Park staff.
40th Junction.
You've been involved in the new neighborhood.
Three incorporation attempts, one more attempt.
We'll thank you for everything. Thank you for your involvement and for your attention to the county and that kind of thing. And we just wanted to give you a little token of our appreciation. It's a hat that's celebrating the Pines 100 years.
Yes.
Not in the city, but as a territory. And then this is a lapel pin that also is a 100-year lapel pin. And thank you, and thank you for being a part of the Pine in that way.
You're
right. And thanks for that. Thank you.
Dennis has supported the Pine in a lot of ways. A lot of folks probably that are here weren't here when he was supporting the Pine before it was incorporated. Some of you would remember him before I went into the county commissioner and he left the county commission to go to Salem to represent us. They came back and was on the county commission again. And when the Pine incorporated, when we went to Salem, he helped show myself, along with now Commissioner Hunter, around the State House in Salem. So he has supported the Pine in so many ways. And one of the company, Wilderness Garbage, started Can Cancer, and Dennis supported us in that role. And so Dennis, for the garbage companies and from me, that's for you and your wife, because usually, I think you got the hat,
right?
But you need to give your wife something for putting up with you.
I appreciate
it. So,
thank you.
Thank you.
The campaign that Stu was running, for those of you who may not know, I lost a son in 94, cancer. He was 25 years old, and he didn't last very long once he was diagnosed. In touch with a lot of people.
Thank you. That's wonderful. Well, thank you. It was nice.
See, actually, I had to take good care of La Pine because I'd come down here and Marvin Russell would set me straight.
Yes, I got a question for you. Are there ghosts underneath the State House in Salem?
Huh?
Are there ghosts running in the corridors on the State House in Salem? I seen a thing on TV that didn't happen.
You know, I saw some weird people, but I don't think people don't realize how many state police officers are in that building. Most of them are in plain clothes. Most of them are retired. We had a guy in there stealing purses. He didn't have a clue that there were cops all over that place. It didn't take long to arrest him. But when we had the earthquake in 93, it was very early in the morning, and the maintenance staff put up crime scene tape in front of the Capitol so you couldn't go in the doors and stuff. Larry Campbell showed up and says, "Get that crime scene tape down before the media sees that."
Well, Dennis has been really beneficial to La Pine for a long, long time. A lot of people say, you know, the county just ignores South County, but that hasn't been true. And Dennis has certainly proved that. He even went so far as one time to jump my car for me so I could get back home.
Dennis did a lot for supporting getting the La Pine Water District established. At least once, maybe more than once, he wrote a check on his... just because we needed some money. I think one of them was $12 million.
We got the well. I was instrumental in getting the well to the
well. Absolutely, yeah. You know, we probably still not have water and sewer today if it weren't for Dennis. So. But he was always there in supporting ways and, you know, helping us get funding that was available, helping us work towards it. And then, like I say, in smaller ways, just from his own county fund, writing a check for us when we needed it.
Well, Dennis was very helpful in making Salem notice that La Pine did exist. He worked with LCAP on that and the Chamber of Commerce, and he helped a lot.
One of my favorite Department of Land Conservation Development stories is the director in the 90s had a no-growth philosophy about all of Oregon, but he came to the legislature and in our committee, and he had these maps, and he put them up on the wall and was going to explain the maps, and they all stopped at the crest of the Cascades. And it was Dick Benner, and I said, "Dick," I said, "there's a whole other part of the state on the east side, on the other side of those mountains." He said, "Well, yeah, but these are just planning maps." And I said, "That's my whole point."
Well, let me be one of the first to say, Dennis, we are going to miss you, but we won't have to. You can come down and see us anytime.
Absolutely.
As president of the board for the community kitchen, I want to thank Dennis and the other commissioners for all the support you guys have given us. It has been terrific. We've grown quite a bit.
Yeah.
We just got figures today that the first year the amount of money they took in was $13,000. So far this year, we've taken in over $103,000.
Wow.
That's the generosity of not only the commissioners, but the people that live here. It's just been outstanding. You know, the bookkeeper's complaining. He doesn't like to go to six figures. And Dennis, I used a quote you said at the meeting that we had with you about 3 or 4 weeks ago,
yeah,
where you said that over in Salem, they deal in small lots where we deal in acres. I used that when I delivered those paperwork for that grant over there to the guy. I used those same words. Hopefully they can get across to them that we need this land here.
When Weimar had their application in to build down here, Deschutes County and the City of Bend have a ordinance that says if you're a certain size building, certain number of employees, you got to have a shower for bicyclists. It's just the way it is. And so the owner of Weimar calls up and says, "We don't do that at any of our other stores." And I said, "Well, I'm sorry." I said, "That's the law." And the City of Bend and both Deschutes County, and you're going to have to put it in there. And I says, "Besides, down in the pine, you're going to have employees that may be shoveling snow, might be getting wet and cold. A warm shower would help them get ready and, you know, get back on the line. And I said, it would have helped a whole bunch probably if you hadn't called in the middle of commute options week. So they put their shower in there, and I think it's pretty good.
Anyone else?
Thank you. Do you have a city council meeting after this?
Yeah, we're going to take a break for a few minutes, until 7:30 probably.
Adjourn this portion of the meeting at 25. The LaPlante City Council work session of Wednesday, October 27th, 2010, is called to order at 7:38 p.m. We have one item on our agenda, City of LaPlante City Hall organization and staff.
Thanks. That took a little longer than we thought, but that's okay. That happens.
It was good.
Good discussion. As you know, obviously, Ilana's leaving, and we have to get another body in City Hall, and the position is some of these folks said earlier. I think you heard from Tammy being involved, and this is kind of the next stage in that evolvement as we move on as a city. And so these are kind of what I did is put together a couple draft kind of options, call it what I thought were maybe a couple of the bookends that could work to fill that position that would move us along in the direction that I know the council wants to go. And one of the things you gave me in my duties when you did it was to look at the city hall and the structure and the systems and included employees and employment and all of that. So I started looking at Leroy and cities and looking at different job descriptions and different options that are out there. There's lots of cities and looked at, thought about our needs, and I met with Roger and we talked. So these are just kind of where I was giving some examples of where we could go, I thought. And so each of these, you will have kind of A is an announcement, B is a kind of a job description, and then you'll hopefully in there you should have kind of a dollar total that includes myself and whatever position it is that based on the job description and Patty. And these are just broad estimates. And then the budget page, just so that you see that we have $204,000 budgeted and for personnel for the year. So, if you look at actually option two, which is, option one, I've handed out some of them. I may not even have saved me them. But option one was to have an assistant to the city manager and a deputy and slash kind of deputy reporter. When I looked around at a lot of cities, especially smaller cities, a lot of them have the city manager as the reporter by title only. The staff really kind of fill the role. Now, if you get real small, they're a staff of one and they do it all. The role that Patty plays now doing minutes and sending things out is kind of forms that's the duty of the recorder in a lot of ways. But recorders across Oregon do all kinds of stuff. I mean, it's everything from soup to nuts. I mean, some of them are budget officers, some of them are public works people. I mean, they're everything. This was kind of taking, and this, you'll notice on that, it was 24 to 40 hours. We were going to move Luana down to 24 hours. Because the duties have changed so much. Because the city manager has taken on a lot of what was done. And then with Patty doing the minutes. So this is a position that would, if you look at the kind of the duties, would be an assistant to the manager. And, you know, could get into some projects, work on projects, take a lead role on projects, so we can move some things along that we haven't been able to work on. You know, because we're going at trying to go at a faster pace. So it's a lot of what has traditionally been done by our city recorder, but additional responsibilities, kind of moving up the pole a little bit, doing more. And I put a $15 to $17 an hour range, which is about give or take a buck less than Luana's making now and a buck more. What I did is, just for the estimate, I put in, I did 25%, I went and looked at kind of how we're doing it now, and I put in retirement, knowing we're going to have to move to retirement, because I didn't want to give you some glowing thing that then, you know, if it's 6 months from now or a year from now, you know, we're going to have retirement, because sewer and water has it, we're going to have to go there. So when you actually see the benefits on that last page, that included just I just put 6%. That doesn't mean you may give 2%. I mean, you could give 8%. I just picked 6% to give you an idea, and I took the kind of the current health costs, so you can get an idea of what that could be. And I also put it at 40. Now the person may work 30. It depends on if we did that. The second one was in talking with Roger, I won't take credit for things I don't do. The community development director piece of this came from Roger. When we went over all this, he said, you know, Rick, I know exactly what you're looking for as a kind of an assistant city manager or an assistant to the manager, but so much of what comes in the doors can be development related. Working with people in subdivisions, this leads to road discussions in a lot of ways. So much of it really does evolve around that little thing, and we've had so many code discussions. When we get our ordinances, they don't take the place of a planner by any means, but they can ask and answer all those entry-level questions and save our contract time with our planners and things. And so I thought, Roger, he's been around. I thought, you know, not a bad idea. So then I kind of started high-grading kind of between community development director, assistant to the city manager, by looking at other job descriptions that are out there out of the 200 and some cities that are around, and then some actually were looking for help. And I, you know, got some copies of some of those. And this position then would be, you know, moving up higher kind of in the scale. And the pay then was proportionally higher. And Roger thought for this we needed to be in the 40s to probably do that. So I put a range of $38,000 to $46,000, and because we don't offer a retirement right now, that's a little bit of a debate that we'll be with folks. But this one, there's a few more, you know, I think requirements. Definitely, you can give this person projects. They can, you know, speak on behalf of the city and really get into some stuff we'd like to get done. And then the idea is, too, if it worked out, there's opportunity for advancement. This person could become the city manager, just like you hire an assistant chief at your fire department. If the chief retired, you often move that one up. Your chief retired here, or you got a new one, but in that case, assistant chief didn't move up. The board at the time decided that that assistant chief wasn't the guy for the job. But the next time, maybe it is. So this is kind of like hiring your captain or assistant chief. It could, if you have the right person and that's who the council wants, could become that city manager. But if you don't feel that they've got the skill set that you're looking for, the personality you're looking for, you leave them where they are and you go hire your city manager, just as the fire department did. And that's really how schools do it. Assistant school superintendents, sometimes they move up, sometimes they don't. You know, so you don't fret over that when you're trying to hire that person. You try to find the best person you can and hope that maybe that could work out. One of the things you want is to have a succession plan, if you can. Try to make sure that there's good people there. This is less than a city manager, more than a city recorder by quite a bit. Job requirements. You'll put desirable experience would include a bachelor's degree in public or business administration or planning, community development related field, management or supervisory experience required, or a combination of education, training, and experience. There's a strong desire this person reside in the greater La Pine area. You know, we didn't put it, I didn't want to put it down as a you had to, because people can't sell houses right now. So that, those are kind of the two bookends. You have everything in the middle, or, you know, it's really an open thing. It's kind of, what is the council looking for? But my thought was, we need more capacity at City Hall to take on more complicated, deep issues. And we have a lot of them that we haven't talked about that we need to start working on. You know, just different things from, I'd like to spend some time on the law enforcement issue. But if I could get someone else to work on some of the other things, then I could do that. I was telling, I think, Adele last night that we, the software system, I got three Cassell people coming in a couple of weeks. You know, the sewer and water on Cassell, we're on QuickBooks. It just isn't going to work. So we have to mature as a city to get a real city software system that's integrated. And so that's going to take some transition and all of that. So these are all things that 2011 we need to do to take on sewer and water and to become something. And we need more capacity there. Or whether there's another when we get one and how that all plays out. So I'd like to hear from you guys and see what you would like. What I'd like to do is get permission to kind of move forward on one of these and let me start hunting it out. And how I would hire, it would involve a couple of councilmen and maybe somebody in the community would help interview, you know, come up with someone that we think would work if they come along. And I don't want to just do that myself. I'd like to get, I always get input and have other people involved. I'm work on interviewing architects. And, you know, I've invited some other people to participate. That's my style. Three or four heads are better than one. And you kind of get so anyway, that's kind of where, so I got the budget there for you. I got kind of the estimated cost and kind of a couple outlines with job descriptions and announcements.
Well, I like the option too. One thing that I question is, well, two part thing. How long probably would it take to find this person, and then how much longer would you anticipate being here to work with this person?
Well, I can stay till next summer or somewhere in there, and that's a, you know, the reality is, as far as a, you know, I think I'm supposed to be here till the end of February or end of March, one of those. I can't even find my agreement, so someone else will tell me. I enjoy doing it. If I stay longer because the council at that time wants me to, that's good. We wouldn't start finding someone for myself till after the first of the year, because, you know, I think that definitely you're going to want the city manager is going to want to know who the new council is. You're going to probably have to have a retirement of some type before you're going to get a full-time city manager. You know, it's just one of those things where we haven't even started to work on retirement. You know, retirement benefits and all that. So there's enough things going on that, yeah.
Okay. So
how long it takes to get someone, you know, in talking with different folks about it, there's a whole lot of people that, you know, have been somewhat laid off, you know, with a lot of skills out there. I mean, there's more people looking for jobs and skill sets than there's ever been. And so I think at this salary, you know, we should be able to find someone pretty good. You never know until you start hunting. But it's a desirable area. It's working for government. People are leaving private industry. They might have worked for government, went to private industry. Now private industry is struggling. They want back to government. So I actually think we might be surprised.
So with option two, you would be looking specifically for someone, leaning towards someone who would have the desire to work into the city manager
position. I wouldn't put the emphasis on that. It's you're hiring for someone with some good skill sets, and then you'll be able to tell after a while if that person is, you know, we're not hiring, I don't think, that we're not saying you are going to become the city manager or something. I think it helps you find somebody. If people know that there's some opportunity to maybe move up, it helps you also get a better person. Yeah, because they're going to see a salary increase.
That's kind of what I was asking, is that you're, you know, looking for that person who would want to move up. hopefully.
My original drafts of these, and this is about the fifth one, and so, you know, I sent you guys out one a few days ago that was kind of one, but, you know, that's why they're drafts, and these things are fluid, and first time I did this, I didn't put anything about, like, there's opportunity for advancement. And talking with some people, they're the ones who suggested, you know, you ought to throw that in because it might help you. Someone may come that really wants, they'll think, hey, this is a chance to become a city manager, and you know, you might get a better person. So I thought, you know, that makes sense. I don't have to have all the ideas. It came from other people. And so I threw it in. Then hearing more folks saying, well, you know, don't want to give them too much impression that they could become that. So I thinned that up a little. And now you see the opportunity for advancement exists for a qualified applicant. It doesn't go into anything. It's just opportunity for advancement exists for a qualified candidate or person. That gives them, and they'll ask when you interview. They'll ask, hey, what's that mean?
Okay. And so then the option is still there ongoing to be looking for that person, for defining that position that is going to be the city manager and hiring that person, going out hiring that person, and then still maintaining this person.
Oh, right, yeah. Yeah, you go out and get your city manager, and whether or not it's a half-time city manager that you want in the future, you know, all of us were undecided about all of that down the road. I look at these, you have three positions here. One's a city manager, one is this one, one is Patty's administrative assistant.
Okay.
And this one needs to be more than we've had, and that's really, you know, and I just throw in that if it happened to turn out to be a person that would work good, maybe they could become that other person. But don't look at it as all just married together. We have three positions, and we're going to deal with the city manager role sometime in the spring, you know, and after the new council is seated, that's one of the things we want to, you know, see where it's, what they would like to do.
Okay. Douglas.
What is your estimation of what a salary and benefit package for a full-time city manager? Not a part-time, but a full-time 40-hour-a-week city manager.
Oh.
Let me finish my entire question and then you can answer. If we hire a 40-hour-a-week assistant city manager, which is probably the right thing to do, but that person didn't work out to be what we wanted for a city manager, and we went out and hired a full-time city manager, how close are we going to be on a budget timeline to afford 40-40-40?
You'll have to increase the budget.
Right now you're looking at $165,000 top, based on this year's budget of 204.
Yeah, you would be able to be close.
Our income is going to be considerably less in 2011 than it was in 2010, just based on property values going right and property taxes going down instead of going up. Where are we dollar-wise? How much would we have to increase to cover it over the 204 we have right now?
I think there's three or four things that the city has options on. One is, as you admit, there's probably 25 more grand in there anyway. But the Deschutes County assessor for 2000, the next July to 12, 11 to 12, coming up, or at least what they're saying right now, it wasn't down. It was up 1%, something. I mean, you know, and so, in other words, you will have close to the same tax revenue.
Everybody in my neighborhood's property taxes went down from $300 to $1,000 a year.
We'll have to get that. Secondly, is we're going to have the franchise agreements coming in from Mid-State, which should be about, it's tough to guess, $100,000 a year.
Yeah, maybe about $85,000 to $100,000.
And then you have the capacity in your, because you're not taxing the full amount, you can pick up another $15,000 under the law, because you're at $180 instead of like $95, so you have that option. And then we, as you guys sent you the email earlier about Cascade Natural Gas not quite paying us exactly what they should have. And so there's about $30,000 there. So, I mean, I think that, you know, it's doable. You know, you will pay. So the other part of your question is how much more? I would say when you figure benefits and everything, you're going to pay another
$25,000.
Yeah, $25,000 to $35,000. Yeah. And you have, I mean, so that's within your margin there that I think you'd be fine.
In July of next year, are we going to need, based on what we're doing now, what we're going into, are we going to need 40 in our office? 120 hours.
You might not until, I would say, it just depends on how good what we get out of other person. You know, it's possible you can still get by for halftime. I do believe once we take sewer and water, and you know, we're working on an IGA on that as to when that happens, and that could be over a year from now. Well, most likely, if they get there, where we're headed right now.
We don't want to just get by.
No,
but we have to be fiscally responsible with the taxpayer's money.
Right.
That's part of our job. We don't want to be frivolous.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think that with sewer and water, once you have them, you're needing three full-time employees. The manager would be full-time. The assistant type would be full-time. Now, you'll have four more employees, five more employees.
And part of their budget will be paying for part of that.
Yes. And you'll get
cost.
That's exactly right.
Based on that, I would recommend that option two would be the best way to go.
Councilor McAfee?
Do you want to make your comments first? Oh, I can go ahead, yes. I feel like we're backtracking. We started out looking for a city manager, and things have kind of gone backwards. When I talked to you, you said you were laying off Luana because you were doing most of her duties, which is not what we hired you for. And I don't understand why you want to turn this around and do it another way. Why are you doing her duties? Patty is perfectly capable of city recorder duties. She's been doing most of the work. She has the college education. You could put her in a position as assistant to a city manager, which we desperately need, and hire somebody part-time to do the minutes. It's very confusing to me. We're not doing what we started out to do. And I don't think having a glorified city recorder is taking the place of having a city manager. And you haven't really talked to me about any of this. It comes up, and so maybe you could explain that. Why lay off somebody because you're doing her duties? Why don't we reduce your hours back to where they were?
Yeah, I think that, in fact, if you'll notice, actually, I put in 20 hours. I'm doing 25. You're actually looking to put 20. And if this person, once you get them here and get them going, it is possible that could happen. Because, you know, so I think there's a lot to go through. I think a couple things. One is the reason that before I came, Luana was doing things that I do was there was no me here. So when I get hired, I then take on those duties because she was kind of performing as the city manager for a year because you didn't have a city manager. And so when I came, it was natural for me to start. I was going to the meetings. I'm meeting with the folks. I'm out working on these things. So then those duties came away from her. So prior to me, she had to do them. But a lot fell through the cracks because we didn't have enough capacity.
She was misrepresented. She initially thought that she was going to move up to city administrator or whatever, and that was what our attorney was doing part of her work. She wasn't functioning as a city manager. Jeremy was. And So it's very cloudy here to me. I can't see that you're doing what she was doing because she wasn't really doing it in the first place.
If I may interject here, I think that Barbara's bringing up a lot of valid points that I think that the discussion is inappropriate, that we shouldn't be discussing personal issues and naming people by name and that sort of thing. So we should keep it on a general discussion of the position. And it kind of, you know, and we've spoken before, and so none, what I'm going to say is not going to be a surprise to you, is that, you know, I am in opposition of this. I think that the original plan was voted to the public, and the public invested in this, trusted us to move it forward, and that was to get an experienced full-time city manager. It could be, you know, later on as down the road, it could evolve into something else. But bringing on other personnel at this time, I think, is really not prudent to, you know, stack us with so many high-level positions. I think also the timing isn't really great. You know, this is one of the last council meetings of the year, and or before the election, and why not leave the option open for the new city council to decide what they would think would be good, you know? This is kind of a good idea for an interim basis, but not as bringing it on with benefits and with, you know, on a permanent basis. You know, also, that this whole idea of mentoring somebody, again, with all due respect, is that with you're very talented on your skill set, but the technical piece is not, and you probably agree with me, is probably not your is not your forte, or is not I'm having a little difficulty here. Yeah, it's a little difficult to discuss this. You know, it's really not your thing. And it kind of is an example here is when Barbara was explaining is that was like kind of an inappropriate conversation, which should have happened in an executive session. So, you know, the conversation should have ended almost immediately. So that, like, technical piece. So, those are some of my thoughts, and we want to go ahead and kind of discuss it and maybe things. I think that, you know, that you have done a lot for the city, and I'd like to see you stay on until the completion of some of the projects and the public safety issue and all that. I think that you would be a great aspect in that, a great asset in that respect. But I think, you know, changing the way things were set up at this point should be left to the new council to see if that's the road that they want to go to, you know, why, you know, put them in a box and kind of predetermine the organization.
I understood that one of the things we hired Rick for was to assess our staffing needs. We as a council don't do that. That's not our job. We've got policy. We have a manager to advise us on these things. Rick has been working many hours a week in the office with the staff and doing what we hired him to do, and that's to assess. We, as a council and as individual counselors, did not know what it was, the type of person, the type of qualifications and such that we needed in our office on a day-to-day basis. Rick's been there, done that, and I think he's very qualified to assess that, and that's why these changes are being made, because he's worked here for, 5 months now?
No,
and
something like that.
Very hands-on, and talked a lot individually with all of the counselors, each of us individually and with us as a council, to see what we have observed, although none of us works in the office, and he's talked with a lot of community members on an ongoing basis to see what their observations and desires are. But to me, the most important thing is the hands-on and seeing how things work on a day-to-day basis in the office and the changes that need to be made. And I think that we should trust Rick's ability to do that. I see this, that's why I asked the questions that I did originally, was to get a better understanding of what this position is. Yes, we did hire Rick to assess and help us determine what qualifications we would need for a permanent manager. That does not preclude him from also making determinations on other staffing needs, and that's what this is. And Rick made it very clear earlier that we will still be searching for a permanent manager. This may or may not be that person. Councilor Graham?
Well, first of all, I talked to a lot of people in this community, a lot of people, and I have yet to find one person that said we hired the wrong man for an interim city manager. Mm-hmm. Not one. Everybody that I've talked to has been very happy with Rick and the work that he's done and the advice that he's given us. First of all, when Rick started, there was some problems within our office. We asked that he address that and take care of the problem. And that's part of what he is doing right now, is he's taking care of that problem that we have, and he's submitting his idea for restructuring the office. In addition to that, Rick didn't just go out and start writing this on his own and never said a word to anybody else. He's gone to League of Oregon Cities, he's gone to the same group that helped us hire him and come up with what they feel all together, I assume, all of them, feel that this is a good way to go. And my personal opinion is, we cannot shut the city down for 2 months after the election to wait for the new council. I'll be happy to talk to anybody that's elected. I'll be happy to listen to all of their ideas and everything like that. I'm certainly not going to shut the door on anybody that's elected. However, we are still in the council till January 1st when the new council is seated. And we have the obligation to the city to move forward. We have no obligation to stop what we're doing and just say, that's it, we're not going to do anything for 2 months. That's not what we're here for. Personally, I like the option two. And again, I feel that we're headed down the right way to accomplish what we originally set out to accomplish when we hired the interim city manager.
Thank you.
Councilor
Ward?
I have to agree with Mr. Greiner on not shutting down what the council is doing. I was elected 2 years ago by the people who live here for a 2-year term. That doesn't expire until December 31st, and it didn't. I owe it to the people who elected me to continue to do their work, to do their bidding, and to stop that just because I may not be reelected. That's not valid. It's my job to fulfill my duty for the entire term, and I fully intend to do that. And also, I still say option two is the best, and you have my 100% support in what you've been doing and what you want. Thank you.
I agree. It doesn't make any sense to put things on hold just because there may or may not be, well, there will be some turnover in the council. But, if governments did that all the time in anticipation of turnover, there'd be an awful lot of stagnation. It just doesn't make any sense. And you have turnover and changes in the council anyway, regardless of elections. We've seen that.
former Mayor Martinez did not want to leave the council when he had to because of illness. And, you know, he should still be with us until the end of this December 31st. And I'm sure that would have been his fondest desire. And, you know, things didn't stop. Things didn't stop working just because that council left or because any other council left because they moved out of the city and whatever. You're going to have that turnover. That's, to me, just not a valid reason for putting any decision on hold. Any council at any point in time makes decisions. And moving forward, you'll have ongoing changes in council and they'll make other decisions and you just continue moving forward. To me, that's a non-issue.
Okay, so I think that we all agree is that I agree on you're doing a good job and I agree that we should make a decision. But I think that it should be, why not try it on an interim basis? I mean, why not?
Saying that position?
Yeah.
I think, A, you already have an interim. I think to have a second interim, it's hard. A couple of things. First of all, the comments, I appreciate the comments and all of them, and they're all fair. You know, it's a fair question to ask when you're 2 months from an election. You know, it's a fair. One of the things I always do is say, you know, there's some that are just out here all on the edges. That's not one of those. That's a fair question to ask. I think if you're hiring a city manager, my response would be totally different. You might wait. You might not like that. You know, if you were hiring the manager. And if I was applying for a job, I don't know that I'd want to come to work if a majority of the council was up for election. Because, you know, it's just, picking up moving is difficult. So, this is not the city manager. This is the assistant chief. This is the captain. This is that next level down. And normally city managers would, you know, hire those kind of people. It's not that big of a deal. They would tell you about kind of what they're looking for and why and how and make sure it fits budget-wise, and they would kind of move forward on it. But because I'm an interim, and because I kind of want to include everyone, this is kind of how why I would bring it here. And as far as the comment, I just want to say that you're right when you say technical. I don't use that term. What I would say is what I think you wanted when you hunted for an interim. When I look at the job things that you laid out, you were looking for, as I've used or overused it probably, is you wanted a foundation built, you wanted the structure built, you wanted the house built, you wanted the city built. When you get 90% done, the finished carpenter comes in. My strength is probably building the foundation and building the structure. But that's 90% of a building. The finished carpenter, yeah, you can find some people. And in fact, if you actually have been in the trades business, a finished carpenter cannot do rough carpentry generally. They are total different skills. We are a long ways from being the finished carpenter. The stuff we're working on is the basic foundation structure building. Now, when we hire this position, that's one of the things I would look for is someone that maybe gets into some of that finished carpentry a little more, because then that could be a good balance. But the finished carpenter would never get this city built. So they don't. You try to hire them. It's a different skill set. And that's why you hire interims. They come in and they make the changes. They try to move you the direction you need to go. And take a little more heat for it. That's why you do it. Then once it gets all settled out and things are kind of, you know, flowing along, at that point you can transition to that person that's permanent, and they get to maintain things along and ebb and flow is just normal stuff happens. I mean, that is the idea of an interim, and that's why the League of Oregon Cities recommended an interim. In there was restructuring the office, and I believe what I've outlined and the decisions we've made are part of restructuring the office. When I look at all the issues, and I read minutes for 6 months prior to being here, and look at all the things, and me being here now for 5 months, so it's about a year's worth almost of reading, seeing, and talking, and I believe that this is a well-thought-out way to crescendo up as we move this city along and get us to where I think the community wants and all of you want. Is it guaranteed to be the right way? Of course not. You know, if you don't take any risks and try to move forward, you'll never go anywhere. So I think it's a good foundation going out and finding someone in this salary range, which isn't too different than the salary we actually were paying until we recently changed it. We're asking for higher level qualifications, and I think it would be a great job for somebody. And we're not hiring a city manager, we're hiring a great number two. And I'd like to move, you know, if you want. Now, if we don't want to do that, if the council doesn't want to do that, then, you know, I don't know, we can get a administrative assistant clerk or something. So I don't know.
You know, back to the topic of who this person would be working with on the council, we've had very active, very involved candidates. We're going to know next week what our new council is going to be, and I can't picture any of those who are most likely to get elected not being involved and being around so that whoever is hired is going to know who they're going to be working with.
Well, one of my thoughts, actually, Mayor, was getting a council person or two that would like to help currently elected, at least one. But then we could take, depending on who wins the elections, because they're not elected till January.
Right.
And so there's no issues. We could take one of them, maybe, or two of them, and help let them help in this interview process. So then the person that maybe gets the job knows that they've got a couple of their future bosses support them, and someone that's on the council, so that, you know, it's easier to recruit because they're taking a risk coming here. So
I think that would be.
I think that could work out.
Go ahead.
The one thing I wanted to say is that whoever is elected, there's nothing wrong with that, with them talking to us and giving us their views, because personally, I don't think we ought to hire a full-time city manager until next year. That's my personal opinion. The full-time city manager should be hired with the council that he or she has to work with, not by a lame duck session. But I think what we need to do is to move on now with this, get it going, find somebody that's available, and if in the meantime those who are elected say, hey, this person will make a good city manager for us, we can move from there. If the people that are, the persons that are elected say, hey, I don't think this person's going to work out, we need to go get a real city manager, then that's how we should proceed. But we've got an avenue here where it could possibly be what we need. By the same token, it may not. And I sit here and I stop and think, last December, when I was put on the council, nobody wanted to be on the council. They couldn't get away with that. They had 8 applications in the office, and when they called the 8 applications, they had either moved or they were no longer interested. So you've got 3 people sitting on council right now that were appointed. They weren't elected. You have 2 that were elected. And although I was appointed, I'm still trying to do what I feel is best for the city in relationship to what people have told me they wanted. And I never asked them where they live. I never asked them what their political persuasion is. I never asked them if they're a registered voter. If they give me an opinion, I listen to it. Thank you.
I wanted to apologize. I don't mean to shut you down. I just want to make a point. That's all right. Okay. It was valid. I'm glad you did it. I have another question. You hire an assistant to a city manager, and then in a few months, you hire a city manager, and those two aren't compatible. So are you going to fire the assistant and then start over with all of this?
That would be the city manager that you hire with it. Work with that person and
so
decide.
Wouldn't it be better to hire a city manager first and then an assistant?
You know, I don't think that works in the time frames and the duties and the things that we have. And, you know, most people generally work out okay. And, you know, I mean, people get over and it works. So I think this is a city with 3 employees, and we're just looking to kind of add a little to one of the positions, and so that we can accomplish more. I don't see this as any giant, big thing, to be honest. Like I say, normally you probably wouldn't come here, but this is hiring an assistant to the manager and someone that can maybe do a whole lot of work doing community development stuff, which is all needs that you guys have outlined and things that you want, and you all want to have more things you want us to take on and more things you want us to do and accomplish it quicker. So I've listened to you, and I've tried then to come up with solutions. And a lot of things I won't say here, I've listened to you, and I've tried to do what I think you want. Now, but being city manager, this is what you're supposed to go through, part of it. And I don't mind the debate or the dialogue at all. You guys are all doing a good job. You're donating your time, and you know, it's so I understand it.
I thought that though that we were going to try to get a full-time city manager or a part-time in place in 6 to 8 months, and it doesn't look. Now you're saying you're going to stay till next summer.
No, I didn't. I said my contract ends in February or March. And after the first of the year, we would start. The question he, I think someone, or many people have asked me, how long would you stay? Or would you, and it comes up all the time. And I have said, you know, I can stay past March if that's the wish of the council. But if they don't want me to, I have lots I can go do. I mean, I'm doing stuff all the time, so, yeah.
But to make this work, you would have to stay.
Well, I think it's obvious that I probably will be staying, because we have so many things we're in the middle of right now that will go on for a few more months.
So my closing things is I think it's too expensive. I think that we could try it out on an interim basis or not commit to, you know, benefits and full time. I think that it's too many high level positions in such a small city. Those are generally what my closing argument, comments are.
And just so that you know, because I want to clarify, is I put in the budget the retirement, but if you'll notice, it doesn't have retirement here. The person will come without retirement. I just wanted to paint a picture for you that shows 6 months, a year from now, what
And the estimates, I think, are really conservative, too, as well. Like for benefits.
I had 25%. Our insurance right now, our health insurance is how much a month?
$586 per person.
So $500, and then if you add 6%, and we don't have many other benefits. So anyway, I looked at it and think it's okay, but it may be off by a point or two.
So I think that's that. Oh, one thing is that I just want to put on the record is that when I received an email right before I got here, and it was from Councilwoman Reiner, and it was generally questioning that I think that a citizen had expressed their opinion in their opposition to this position, and it was suggested that maybe one of the counselors had said something that was either confident or was talking out of school or something. But I got an email prior to that. I think it was yesterday. From it was a group email, and it was from our city manager saying that. What the topic of discussion was today, so it really, you know, it was already out there, so it was like no one told secrets out of school or anything. So I just wanted to clarify that. Right?
I'd like to hear public comment, hear what those people are sitting in here, what they feel, because we have two possible counselors next year sitting in the audience. We'll have to hear what they do.
Okay. I think Del said that she made her final comment, so I'll have to go and think. Barbara, did you have anything?
I have something for her to say.
Did you have anything further?
No, I think I made my point.
And I think I made mine, option two. I want to go with it.
I agree with that.
All right. Public comment.
We have to get somebody.
Now I live in the city.
You could anyway.
Everyone that I have come across, whether it's been in the chamber or businesses or whatever, are just thrilled to have someone like Rick to help build the foundation. And I think that he's got a lot of experience, and he goes out and asks questions. He's researched this, and I think you ought to go with what his suggestions are, because the city is growing, and you're going to have all of these entities and the public works and all of that, and I really think you're going to need these positions.
Thank you. Anyone else? Dan?
You know, I'll have to say something, I guess, but you know, I really applaud you all for what you're doing. This process is really a neat process, and it's you guys that brought Rick on, and you made a good choice in doing that, and I think that that's one of the best things that's happened in the city, you know, this real visible amount there. The other thing that I guess, you know, seems like it might be a bit of wisdom to me is when you, even though you don't want to call this an interim position, if you can set it up so you aren't making really long-term contract promises in case, you know, in case something doesn't work out like we expect or something, that, you know, if you can keep from doing that. I think in most positions there's a period of time, a probationary period or something, where people sort of prove themselves maybe before they get too entrenched. And it might give you the time to see, you know, what this person would be. But the timing, the opportunity that's there for us right now is this economy. There should be able to get a lot for the money right now. A huge opportunity, I think. Most people, there's people coming in the chamber office all the time looking for jobs. And I got a great place to send them. So I know there's people looking. So we're moving along. We've got some momentum going. And I'd say let's keep the momentum going. If we make a mistake, it's always, you can always fix it, I think. Anyway, for the opportunity to.
Thanks, Dan.
I just want to mention that we will be looking at some other positions next year, too. You know, some of those will be pretty much self, like a planner. You know, that will be paid partly from fees, but we're also talking at code enforcement. I mean, we are going to be growing. There's no way to get around that. So I think you kind of, you know, as things come up, when we're talking about a person that's going to be doing the harder stuff, the stuff that I was doing and not getting paid for, you know. So, I mean, you need more help to get some of those things in place so that we can move on to start bringing in the funds and taking care of these other positions that are going to need to be. So, that's all.
Thank you. That's good. It sounds like we're doing what the community wants. Sue?
Okay, sitting here just listening to everything, I want to applaud the counselors that want to move ahead. I agree that you can't just stop because of an election. If you stop going to the grocery store because it snowed, you're not going to get any groceries. So I think the council needs to take their time, number one, go over what Rick is prepared, keep asking the questions. There's no such thing as a bad question. And unfortunately, Rick has a thick skin, or actually it's fortunate, but he has a thick skin, and that's a professional. He is a professional city manager is what he is, and unfortunately he is used to taking the lumps. That's his job. I will have to maybe buy him a different jacket. It just doesn't cut it.
I've been catching that all day.
But, you know, every one of you has a valid concern, and that's what is exciting about this council. You show your concern for the city. So that's, you know, commendable to you folks. But don't wait for an election. If you stopped and hesitated on every little issue, the city wouldn't get anywhere. So that's my opinion. Thank you.
Thank you. Austin.
Okay, I'm just going to say that
even no matter what the status of this person that we might hire, I say we because I live here, sort of, even though I'm outside the city. But it's going to take time to interview anybody for any position. I don't think you need to go crazy one way or the other. I don't even have the option one or option two in front of me. But I'm just saying that, you know, it's going to take time to interview people for any position, and people are going to have to hear about the position. I know with the internet, wow, it could be next week. But I got a call from some lady yesterday on calling my phone number for a company that went out of business 5 years ago. And it's still on the internet. So don't be surprised at anything as far as what you need to do and what you have to do. I mean, the position could be whatever you guys on the council next week or whatever with your consensus determine it to be, you know, the next meeting. You know, I don't think we have to. It's not like Chicken Little, the world's coming to an end. You know, you will make the right decision. You'll, in a way, have to live with it down the road. New people, whether it's Stu or whatever, you know, whoever gets the job on the council. But, you know, it's not going to happen overnight. I don't think we should go crazy about it. Just keep doing it. That's what you have to do. As the saying goes, just do it. It'll happen. That's sort of an encouragement and a comment. Don't get worried about it, because when you start worrying about things, they start falling apart. People make mountains and molehills they don't need to be. And it's nothing directed at anybody on the council now. I'm just saying, because I'm future resident of the mine, I say, because I think eventually the city's going to come out to meet me at the old, the armpit at first. But that's down the road.
Thank you. Thanks for your input.
I think, on humble opinion, since I've been in this, since the start of this, that one of the best decisions this, not only this council, but all the councils combined, that they made was hiring that man over there. He has done one hell of a lot of work in the short time he's been here and gotten a lot of things straightened out, and that's what you needed. I strongly suggest that you take his advice and get this second person in. What Dan said, with the unemployment the way it is around this country, there's a lot of talent out there looking for work, and they would take a less salary to do it, to get back to work and get money coming into their families. Mm-hmm. The only problem I see is where they want to move to Long Pine.
We still become even a winner.
As a former administrator and a doctor of administration, I can tell you that if you make this interim, you're really going to narrow your talent pools. You want to make it full. Full time, go for the gusto, and you'll bring in good talent. But if you make it interim, I think you have a very hard time getting what you want. You're probably not going to be satisfied when you do hire somebody.
Thank you. Okay, anyone else? Thank you. Very good comments, good input. So, are we ready for consensus?
Yeah, you're not voting, so if you basically, appears to be at least three people that would like to move forward on this. So, if that's the case, start working on the next step of it, figuring out where we want to advertise it and how we want to do that and all that. And a good point, our gentleman from the armpit in his green and yellow truck, his dock truck, I was telling him, he's got John Deere on the site. But it is going to take some time. You know, the reality is, this is basically the 1st of November. Mm-hmm. By the time you get it out and all of that, you know, the election will be well over, and we'll know there, and you get them in. And then people, big issue right now, really, and a lot of you can guess, but it's housing. You can't get rid of, if you own, you can't get rid of where you are. again, you can't, that's actually a huge issue right now, people moving around. So, you know, I would bet, I'd like to get someone, you know, and they don't usually move at Christmas. So, you know, maybe January before someone actually is here, that's why, you know, that's 60 days out, and it could be 90 days. If we wait till January or February to do this, to meet with the new council members, then it's April and May. And so it's just too long to go with 1.5 people.
No, I think the timing is good to get moving on the process. Because, like I say, that person isn't likely to be here until the same time the new council is anyway.
Yeah, that's correct.
Is there a possibility you could hire somebody to do the minutes? To assist Patty in that? Because she will be the only person in the office.
Well, hopefully, you know, in a couple of months, we'd have someone else there.
Right, but in the meantime.
You know, I have thought about that. If we needed some extra help, Luana could come back and work, a day here or there. She told me she would if we had something that we needed to cover. You know, we'll have to change our hours once in a while, and, you know, yes. We could get someone part-time. The problem is I think you guys know, and they both know, mm-hmm. taking minutes and everything is more complicated. You just get somebody to sit and take minutes, mm-hmm. and then it's a different style, it's a different everything and how they do it. And so then you're just hiring someone to a degree, especially if they're just kind of coming in on a Friday, they're just sitting there doing a crossword, answering the telephone.
Well, I mean, taking the minutes at all the meetings.
Well, but for 30 or 60 or 90 days, I think that could be problematic.
Yeah. It's going to take a lot of training just to bring somebody in. A lot of time spent just in that phase.
You know, what will happen is there will be some things that don't get done or don't get as done as timely when you're in a meeting. When you have one less full-time employee, with a third of your workforce isn't there because you're changing directions, there is an effect on the system. So we will have some things that just won't get done, and we all know that. That's true in any company. You know, you don't do the same thing with a third of your workforce gone. So if we have to get someone in to babysit the office, and that's something, if you guys think you'd like, we could certainly do that. If Luana Patty's going to take a day off or a couple of days off, do we need someone to come in? You know, I thought you can do that a lot of different ways. Our amount of traffic in the office, other than people looking for mental health counselors across the hall and the jail, is minimal. I mean, today I was there basically all day, except when I was gone here and there for a couple of times, other than people that are on our committees and things that come by for stuff.
There wasn't anybody.
We didn't have not one citizen or somebody came in to ask a question or do something. So the word is working on stuff. And if you pay someone just come sit there, they can't work on stuff. So, you know, I might think I would need to save the money once in a while. You just might have the office closed while you're in this kind of holiday season coming up, and kind of roll with it, knowing it'll inconvenience some folks once in a while, as the state of Oregon did furloughs. They just closed on some projects and go from there. But if we need that extra help, Barb, I think we could do that, you know, but probably not take minutes. That's more to that. That's actually a very technical job. Patty does a fantastic job on it, and she's doing a great job as our administrative assistant, and I hope she stays for a long time.
You can't have just anybody come in and take the minutes, because they have to know how to figure out what's important to capture and put down and
where are the people.
Yeah, we'll pass out we put out for RFPs on the city hall. If we find the city hall, we can buy or do something. The requirement of the federal government that we finance is you have to do this.
Give me one of those. Oh, I just
We have four companies that submitted, and we talked about six. Scott Steele, something happened and the heart attack, one of his employees was working on it and couldn't get it in. He called me yesterday and apologized. But we got one from Coos Bay, one from Portland, two from Bend, so it's a good variety. If you look at the prices, $7,400 up to $96,000, so they're all kind of within our range. That's a good price. And we'll end up getting all kinds of good information out of it. I have emailed out to a few folks and asked them if they'd like to help do these interviews, and I expect to have the recommendation to you at our meeting in November as to who to hire. If a councilman or so would like, the date is set for November. It can't be changed because we got these companies coming, and it's November, Thursday the 6th. Is that 4th? And we're going to do it at 2 o'clock to about 5 or 6. So if there's a councilman that wants to, and I've asked...
November 4th is the ERT.
Yeah, this is after that. They're done at 1:30. This starts at 2. Are they handled? I went through that. But I want to get it to where you guys can, we can vote on that, because otherwise it counts. With Thanksgiving coming and all that.
What is this for?
This is to study, to get us our city hall. We've looked at a couple existing buildings, and one of the requirements of who will loan us the money, the USDA, they require us to have a needs assessment and an analysis of the buildings that we're looking at, and floor plan, kind of just a rough, it's preliminary. They want to make sure we can afford a payment on a building. They want to make sure any building we look at meets ADA requirements. They want to look at how many rooms, offices, and how big of council chambers do you need. So this architect we hire, these are people who have all built city halls, built public meeting rooms, and they will put together a little report that we will get. Ultimately, we'll use that to go to USDA for funding. And right now, they will loan us money at 3.75% for 40 years. It is the lowest, cheapest money in like 40 years. And so it's a perfect time. So buildings are cheap, interest rates are cheap, so it's a perfect time for us. Again, as part of that, we're going to hire more help and take on sewer and water. We got to have a building.
Can you email me the buildings that you're looking
at?
Because I just saw one, but you have different buildings you're looking at.
Yes. I don't actually have, well, I have to go take pictures, but... So anyone that would like help on this, other than we don't want a quorum, and on that Thursday, if anyone would like to, and I know some people are busy and doing things, so... Barbara, would you like to do that on that Thursday? Help interview these architects?
Certainly.
Okay.
November 4th?
Yeah. Okay, we'll keep me in line on that. It's the 4th. Because the election's on the 2nd. That's Tuesday, so 4th. Would you? Okay. Doug and Barbara will help. And I've asked...
yes.
You were going to come and check.
I
emailed you.
I can do it.
And Kitty's mother had said she would help. Do that.
One thing I've also learned about real estate, if people find out somebody's interested in it, the price goes up a lot of times. Or somebody else comes in and tries to outbid you. Are the people involved with these real estate items aware of your interest?
That's why I was vague, back to Barbara. We have two or three buildings we're looking at, and that's just, you said it right, and we'll just leave it at that for now. And
that's why we hired him, he's smart.
I got a bid on a building totally screwed me. Turned out it was a friend of a lawyer.
Okay.
Thank you. You guys, sorry it took so long. I apologize for that. You were troopers hanging in there.
Our joint meetings with the county sometimes do go long.
And I'll be here all day tomorrow. So, if anyone wants to visit me.
He's lonely, and you hear nobody comes in. Right. That's the rule. During the meeting at 8:47 p.m.